Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Howard was an icon in New Bedford. I first met Howard when I was 19 years old, and I traveled with him and John Bullitt to many of these council meetings. Many of these people in this audience know Howard. One thing I can say about Howard was he always had time for you if it was a fisheries issue. No matter what time of the day, you'd call him up, and he always made time to discuss a fisheries issue with you. And he taught many of us in this room what we know about fishing today. So with that, we'd like to have a moment of silence in his memory. He was 97 years old when he passed away.
Okay. Thank you, Rodney. A couple of brief remarks before getting to the agenda item. Just a reminder to silence your cell phones. We've got Scallop Framework Adjustment 21 on the agenda first thing this morning. And we'll work on it until we're finished with it. Just a couple of quick words to the council, and then I want to speak directly to how I see the day playing out in terms of process. The council received two written correspondence, one on January 4th and one on January 7th. And I had a meeting with Governor Patrick on the 10th of January. And based on those two letters and conversations I had on the 11th, I felt it was appropriate to place this item back on the agenda. The council has, in my opinion, always had a good working relationship with the scallop industry, sharing and building and working on the science, sharing and building and working on management. And at some point between the November meeting and today, things went awfully wrong. Took a terrible turn. So I've asked the council to talk about and listen to the audience today and the elected officials and the industry representatives. And then I want the council to listen to and be reminded of the decisions that it made back in November and determine whether or not they still stand by the decision they made in November. Now, it's unprecedented that we do that. And that's another issue that I think this council needs to address after today, perhaps at the next meeting. What are the circumstances by which we will revisit a decision we've made? We need to have a discussion about that. But this was an unprecedented situation in my eyes, at least in the 15 years that I've been involved with this council. It was also, in my memory, the largest single action we've ever taken in terms of dollar impact for 1 year. That, too, was in my mind as I thought about this. And the fact that a governor called me and asked me to sit with him on a Sunday weighed heavily on my mind. So, to get to the process of today, I believe that the best process will be that we have some elected officials in the audience. Pat Fiorelli has collected their names and provided them to me, so I'll call through them and ask you to come forward and speak into the microphone, tell the council why you're here and what you think we need to consider. Also call on industry representatives, members of the industry AP as well, to provide their input, and also members of the public. I see that running till around 10 o'clock. After that, I'm going to come back and have our council staff provide a presentation to the council and remind us the decision we made in November. why we made that decision and all of the issues we had to balance when we made that decision. And then I'm going to turn to the council, and I'm going to see, is there someone on the council that wishes to make a motion to revisit a previously submitted action? That's the way I see the day playing out. Are there any questions? I apologize. I have a pretty bad head cold, so if my voice comes in and out, give me a moment. So, seeing that there's no questions, I'll go right to the audience and the elected officials. I have on my list Garth Patterson, representing Barney Frank. Garth?
First, I'd like to thank the chairman for the action that he took today. The congressman is very appreciative of that, so that the council can reconsider a vote on the scallop proposals. Congressman couldn't be here today. Obviously, he wanted to. I'm sure everyone on the council knows his position on this issue. And I'd just like to reiterate the feeling for the congressman, obviously, is reflective of the feeling of the number one fishing port in the country in his district, New Bedford, and the scallop was all up and down the coast. He feels, and after being apprised of what happened at the last council meeting, that based on the scientific recommendations of the PDT and the Science and Statistical Committee, especially in these hard economic times, and the fact that sustainably the 47 million pound proposal could be and should be allowed to be caught, that he weighed in very heavily on that. He authored a letter along with 17 other members of Congress, including Senator Kerry, Representative Tierney, Congressman Jones, and others all up and down the coast, and really felt that in the last meeting, one of the reasons we wanted this revisited was so that the council could vote after knowing the full recommendation and what the impact was on the scallop community, who's had enough time to fully digest, you know, what the benefits would have been for the 41 million pound proposal or the 29 days proposal as opposed to the 47 million pound proposal. And like I said, ultimately NOAA, NIMS, and this council are part of the Department of Commerce, and it's about jobs, creating jobs, keeping jobs, not just for the scallop boat owners. We understand this is a fishery that's very healthy and very lucrative, but there's crew members, there's processing jobs, there's so much infrastructure attached to the scallop industry, not only for New Bedford but for ports up and down the coast, that when the scientific recommendations that the council utilizes to make these votes says that you can do a proposal that isn't 47 million pounds versus 41 million pounds, to people like the congressman and others, that's should be a no-brainer, especially in these economic times. And again, fully appreciate that the chairman took this action today. The congressman is really appreciative, and hope that the council does allow a revote. And I will just leave with this also. In the future, we do know, and we've asked the secretary this, and we've met with Ms. Lipchenko and Pat in D.C., and the congressman would really like to see action taken to reanalyze the closed areas in the Georges Bank, where we know that there's a large mortality rate of scallops, and reanalyze that to see if those closed areas, if that's still a good policy to keep those closed, especially with the monetary value involved up there. And if the council can initiate that, we'd be most appreciative. Thank you very much today. Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, council members.
Thank you, Gord. Next, I have Bill Strauss. Oh, sure. Mayor Lang?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate being called up to appear. This is the fourth time I've been before the council, and I appreciate greatly the opportunity to be heard, and also appreciate you allowing this motion to be reconsidered, this regulation to be reconsidered. I have a letter from the governor that I'd like to read into the record and then submit. It was dated yesterday. It indicates as follows. Dear Chairman Papalatto and Council, thanks again to you and the members of the Council for your willingness to reconsider your recent decision relative to the days at sea for the scallop industry for 2010. I know reconsideration is unusual, but your decision to do so reflects understanding of the uncertainties in the science and your appreciation of both the importance of the industry to the Commonwealth's economy and the significance of your prior decision to the fishing families of New England. My understanding is that there is more than one right decision recommended to you by the Council staff. On behalf of a vital but already struggling industry, I ask that you consider the recommendation that has a less drastic impact on their livelihoods. Once we are through this chapter, I look forward to working with you and NOAA more closely on our shared goal of further improvement to the science and methodology for fishing regulation, as we have discussed. Respectfully, Governor Deval Patrick. Now, I also have submitted a letter to the full council that addresses Scallop Framework Adjustment 21, and I will, I'm not going to read that into the record, but I would ask that you consider it, and each of the councillors have an opportunity to consider it. I want to make some very brief points today, and this is something that I think is very important for the council. I have appeared before you in Portland, Maine. I've appeared before you in Mystic. I've appeared before you in Plymouth, now today in Portsmouth. I did not go to Gloucester for the protests in November. I asked people from New Bedford not to go to Gloucester for the protests because we firmly believe in the council process and NIMS and the NOAA process, and we've done everything we possibly can to work with the council. And I think, as was stated by the chairperson, we have built a tremendous amount of rapport, trust, and confidence by working together. What happened in November, I think, was a dramatic breach of that relationship. And I'm not quite sure why or how, but as the mayor of the city that has a $1 billion fishing industry, that's with landings plus all the other ancillary services that are rendered to the fishing industry, it was extremely, extremely disappointing to me that the council made a cut that would result in landing somewhere between around $70 million, although I see that the council thought it was slightly less, but I believe around $70 million. And then when you combine that with the other processing and shore side support, comes to somewhere around $250 million impact on the city of New Bedford. Now, when you look at the reports, and I love reading the reports, and I have only admiration for the difficult task of assembling the data and trying to get real-time data and trying to figure out exactly what it all means long-term and how it impacts on conservation measures. And I want to tell you that the New Bedford fishing industry is the number one conservation industry, I believe, in the country, and we support conservation efforts. And we've come an awful long way over the last 30 years regarding the attitude of New Bedford concerning the sustainability of the fisheries. But what I want to tell you is that it is still completely uncertain as to how this would impact the scallop fishery, how it impacts, quite frankly, the yellowtail issue in fishery, which I'm happy to talk about at length as well, because I feel they're absolutely indelibly tied together at this point. And I think it's important, as the chairman indicated in his letter indicating that this would be reconsidered, that obviously there has to be some attention paid now to how it impacts on ground fish and on yellowtail. But the fact of the matter is, in spite of all our good intentions, in spite of all us being conservationists, in spite of all of us wanting to preserve these fisheries, it is extremely difficult to say what the impact is on with any specific reg on the fisheries and whether or not we're going in the right direction, whether or not we've made tremendous gains, whether we've made incremental gains, whatever it might be. But I can tell you the impact on the people of the city of New Bedford without any doubt. A $250 million decline in the fishing industry is going to mean extreme hardship to hundreds and hundreds and perhaps as many as 1,000 families. If it's quarter cutback and we have four 1,000 people working in the industry. Perhaps as many as 1,000 families will be dramatically impacted by this reg. And I know it's in terms of, well, and there's going to be better days coming. Better days coming. Right now we're going through the worst recession in the history of the country. And we all know that, and we hear it said all, you know, time and time again. You'll hear the president say it again tonight. But if you're on the ground and you're working day in, day out, trying to keep people in their homes, keep people in their jobs, making sure kids are you know, being fed, then you understand that this is the worst economic circumstance we've ever had in our lifetimes. And a cutback of $250 million out of the New Bedford economy is a dramatic, terrible effect of a regulation that we're holding our thumb up now saying, well, you know, for the sake of a few years from now, we think it's better that we take the hit now. Taking the hit now is not something that's an option for the people of New Bedford that rely on this industry. And I think that Section 8 specifically says that we have to take economic impact into effect. And I can see people say, well, you know, these are like the scales, and we'll weigh towards the fish. But the fact is, we don't know what the impact is on the fish. Let's weigh in this circumstance the scales in regard to the families that are involved in this industry. New Bedford has done everything it can to work with this council. We're asking you that you work with us over this morning and then in the future to make sure, number one, we build up that trust and rapport again, but secondly, that we don't have this dramatic, disastrous impact on the people who have made the fishing industry in New Bedford the number one port in the country, number one. But number two, the culture, tradition, and quite frankly, the lore of a place like New Bedford. We will collapse this industry. We will collapse the city if we have a regulation like this at this time. So I have my two letters here. You can't imagine how much we appreciate you reconvening and considering this, though. Because the darkest hours were when we thought there was not going to be reconsideration. And we're really fit to be tied and beside ourselves trying to figure out how we prop this up. So we really appreciate the idea that you came together in good faith. We know the staff will present all the options this morning, whether it's 2, 2-4, 2-9. We'll talk about Yellowtail. Let's come up with a reg that absolutely makes sense for the people as well as the stock. So thank you very much.
Still have Bill Strauss and John Quinn.
Good morning. My name is Bill Strauss. I'm a state rep from Massachusetts, from the town of Mattapoisett. My district includes the town of Fairhaven, which it's a friendly conflict we have. It's not the New Bedford fishing industry. It's the port of New Bedford, so it includes my district as well. In the legislature, I also happen to be the House Chairman of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, where fisheries issues on the state level are also taken up, joined by my colleague who also represents New Bedford, John Quinn. I wanted to be brief. I promise that because you've extended us the courtesy of taking us out of order. And I also want to express, as the mayor did, complete appreciation and that the chair and obviously the rest of the council members have taken the time today, and obviously a significant amount of time, to reconsider and revisit this issue that was dealt with at the November meeting in Newport. One of the things that I have to say also in appreciation for the council members, although I haven't been at a council meeting in a while, I used to attend them regularly, and I've always felt that council members don't always need to hear from elected officials every time. So the fact that we're here should reflect that something as well. But something I've thought is never fair to council members is that sometimes people outside the day-to-day process or the regular process of council business assume that based on particular backgrounds or history or working history, council members can be, it can be predicted where they would view an issue. I think that's unfair to the work that you do, and particularly so, I hope, in this issue. Of course, the economic impact of what was done in November with the 0.20 level has a huge impact on our region of the Commonwealth and the state as a whole. But what I'd like to do in just the discrete point that I make and then turn it over, if I could, to my colleague, is remind you, because each council member invariably has priorities that they think of in a difficult issue like this, you do not have a single path on this issue to meet the conservation goals that have to be considered and the impact on the resource. As I understand it, the science and statistic evaluations that you've received and will receive again today allow you to comfortably reconsider the vote that was taken in November and adopt a measure which keeps the council appropriately within the conservation goals, the long-term goals, focusing on the resource, the scallop resource itself. So you can do no harm to the conservation intention that is part of your mandate, but also you can do that by reconsidering it in a way that significantly benefits the economic interests and the population in this area of Massachusetts. So I know from other council measures as they've come up from time to time, sometimes the choice that you have to make puts you in a position of a clear winner and a clear loser. By reconsidering this case, you don't have to make that choice. By going to a 0.24 level, you can meet the conservation goals within the targets for the resource, and you can benefit the population that makes its living with this resource. So that's not always the comfortable decision that you have before you, but you have it in this case. I understand there's always a difficulty in rethinking an issue, but I am confident that all members of the council do this, approach this with an open mind, and I hope that that is successful today for the benefit of the population and the conservation goals that the Act imposes on you. Thank you again for the reconsideration, the time you're taking today to revisit this issue.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is John Quinn. I'm a state representative from the greater New Bedford area, and I appreciate, too, that you're reconsidering this decision. I want to tell you a little bit about my background to put in context my remarks. I have several vested interests in the fishing industry. I have married into a family, scallop family. I have lumped boats to put myself through law school. I've been out on two-week fishing trips in Georges Bank, and I've represented several of the major interests on the New Bedford waterfront over the years as an attorney. I no longer do that, but I understand the industry from every angle. I have appeared in front of this council for the better part of 20 years, starting back in 1989 when I first worked for Harvey Mickelson, a major lawyer in the fishing industry. So, again, what I say here today I think has got some context and some background. I think as the governor's letter said, there are two right answers here. One, the 41 million pound decision, or the other, the 47 million pound decision. Both of these decisions are well below what the scientists say is a sustainable yield. I know some of the remarks or comments about this is that have more pain now and you'll have more gain later. And that sounds good, but I want to tell you about my other occupation, which is an attorney doing some real estate work. A lot of people want to have 10-year mortgages, not 30-year mortgages. But guess what? If you get foreclosed in the first 10 years, you don't have a house. People need to take longer rebuilding plans to make ends meet along the way. I fully support Mayor Lang's analysis that New Bedford will be a virtual ghost town if there's a 25% reduction. We have had one of the highest unemployment rates in the state year after year. Without this industry and the multiplier effect that kicks in all across the region, this is a very, very difficult decision that was made here in November. And I must say, just as maybe political commentary, I cannot think about the recent Inspector General's report that really brought up some very, very interesting and very valid decisions about the enforcement side of NOAA. And I must say, in all honesty, based on my 20 years in the industry, some of those same issues may be appearing in this decision-making process as well. I want to read a part of the letter that Dr. Lubchenco wrote in response to the Inspector General's report. She directed the agency's enforcement and legal offices to take steps to promote greater transparency, ensure fairness, and improve lines of communications between the council or the enforcement and all fishing interests. People are tired of vested interests making decisions that help their own pocketbooks, whether they're in Washington, whether they're in Gloucester, or whether they're in New Bedford. People are sick and tired of it. And I think that letter by Dr. Lubchenco really should apply to all of us on both sides of this table, those that are here making the decision and those that are out here trying to advocate for that position. We've got to do what's right for everybody, not what's right for environmentalists, not what's right for a particular fishing entity or club or group. You're charged with balancing all of the interests and making one decision, taking all facts into consideration. And I know from my part, I know from people I think I can speak from the industry, they're willing to do that. And there's been a great relationship over the years, and it's soured, as you said, Mr. Chairman, in the last couple of months. I hope we can get back on the path of working cooperatively as we go forward. So I hope that you find, based on the analysis you'll hear from your scientists and really the economic impact that will be applied to the Port of New Bedford, that you reconsider the decision and go with the 47 million pound limit. Thank you very much.
That was all I had on my list for elected officials. Are there any others that walked in that I don't have on my list? Okay. So the next group is industry representatives. Drew?
Thank you. I'm Drew Minkiewicz. I'll be speaking on behalf of the Fishery Survival Fund. I just want to thank you for the opportunity to address you on this issue. We're very appreciative of the fact that we're able to sit here and talk about reconsidering this decision, and also want to thank the chairman for indulging us and allowing this unusual step of a PowerPoint presentation. And I apologize in advance of starting an early inducement of your PowerPoint coma, but felt it was necessary to throw up some of these facts here for you. And importantly, everything we're going to show you on these slides wasn't generated by us, but is actually pulled out of the pages of the analysis that was done for you by the council and the scientific staff. And there's a lot of great information, a lot of hard work has gone into this. And so the question is, you know, why are we here today? Because the chairman's correct. You know, we've always had a very good working relationship with the council, and we want to continue that. And we look forward to having that discussion in the future about how do we go forward from here and how do we work better. Because it is important to us to work cooperatively with you all. But what I think you've found is that in the midst of this great recession, the cuts that are proposed with the November decision were really too much for people to handle and justify within their communities, and it's really hit a nerve. And so we're here today to talk about, okay, what are the costs and benefits of this decision? And, you know, what I'm going to show to you, that is there's really little to no risk with the 0.24 option. And the benefits of having this, those funds now far outweigh any speculative long-term benefits. And so we're going to hop into the PowerPoint presentation here. This first slide here is from Table 48 of the Framework 21 document, the final document, and it shows the biomass projections under the different options. And you know, the two on the right are off the table. Those were the Great South Channel closure options. So the discussion today is really about no closure 0.20 and no closure 0.24. And what you can see is at the end of this projection in 2016, this is in metric tons, but I'm going to speak in millions of pounds because my mind doesn't really work very well in metric tons. I'm sorry. What these equate to is 400 million, roughly 400 million pounds, with a difference of 4 million pounds between the two. And at the lowest one, 0.24, we're still at 179% of BMSY. We are currently at just over 150% of BMSY. So what this is showing us is that under either option, we're going to continue to grow this biomass well above, you know, almost twice the level of the projected long-term sustainable amount we need. Another issue I want to address here as well is there's a lot of discussion about how the fishery had went over its targets in 2008 and 2009. And that's true. We certainly did. But there's a couple things you have to look at when you're talking about that. First of all, a comparison between the days of sea allocated for 2010 and 2008 and 2009 is not apples to apples. You know, the PDT analyzed why, looked at, you know, saw that we were going over the targets and took a 20 to 25% reduction off the top in its days of sea allocation for this year, recognizing the fact that the fishery has gone over its targets. So right there, we already have a 25% to 20% buffer off the top in the way the days of sea are allocated. The other thing you have to talk about is, okay, what are the two, there are two reasons that days of sea led to more landings. Because it can be caused by an increase in efficiency in the fleet, or it could be caused by there being more scallops than were originally projected in the open areas. Those are the two ways you can, you know, go over what you were supposed to catch. PDT had a lot of discussion about this. It's been argued and, that there's, for whatever reason, when Amendment 10 was implemented, there was a change in the efficiency of the fleet, and that's why we've seen these increases, and that's why we had the 25% reduction in the allocation of days at sea. Industry, we believe, more on, you know, we're more in the camp that there's probably more scallops out there in the open area. But frankly, we're not going to know that answer until we have the assessment, and that's going to happen in June and July. We'll put, you know, they'll look at the landings in the SAMS model, where they occurred, put it into the model, and we'll have a better idea of what's causing this overage. Is it more efficiency or is it more biomass? But that being said, it's already been accounted for. And then, you know, there was a lot of discussion at the last council meeting about concerns about if we go over this target and we'll go over into overfishing. First of all, as you're going to see from the council and the presentation, they clearly state overfishing isn't occurring in this fishery. And as I say, we're at 150% of BMSY. We have to be at 50% BMSY to even be talking about overfished. So that's just off the table. And we're not, this is not an overfished stock, and overfishing is not occurring. That's, everyone agrees on that. So the issue is, okay, are we, if we go to 0.24 and you go to the 47 million pound projected landings, is there a chance that we're going to go over the ABC recommendation of the SSC, which is 65.2 million pounds? All right, well, let's break down that 47 million pounds. 24 million of that 47 comes out of the access areas. There's four access area trips, about 6 million pounds a trip. So that's 24 million pounds. It's hard tack controlled. Virtually no management uncertainty there. So then the gray area is in the 23 million that's projected to be landed in the days at sea. So for this fishery to go over the 65.2 million pounds that the SSC has said is the ABC, you would have to, they would have to overshoot the projected days at sea landings by over 50% to achieve that. Let's put that in perspective. Over 50% they would have to go over the projected landings to actually reach the ABC, okay? And so for anyone to argue that by 0.24 is a possibility of going over the ABC, or if you want to argue that it's the FMAX, and we'll talk about that later, but if in any way you want to talk, you want to call ABC, FMAX, 65 million pounds is a number we don't want to, you know, the industry doesn't want to go over, you don't want us to go, no one wants to go over 65 million pounds. If you're going to say that the 0.24 option is possible to do that, you have to make an argument that this fishery is going to catch 50% more on days at sea than it has projected after we've already taken a 25% reduction off the top from last year. So that is a major, major increase in landings that you're going to have to argue is going to happen for this to be a reality. So let's just put that in context. The next issue is, there's been a lot of talk about what the SSC recommendation is, FMAX 0.29 or 0.37. What happened was, under Amendment 10, the overfishing rule says you can't go over FMAX. It does not give a number in the document, but it says it is the best estimate at this time. As what we have up here is from language from Amendment 10, Framework 19, and then Framework 21. And what you can see is that in Amendment 10, the best estimate at the time, our currently estimate, was 0.24. Then when Framework 19 came around, after the last stock assessment in 2007, the estimate, the best currently estimate of that time was 0.29. And then you see from the language here, and this is from final Framework 21. This is from the document that was submitted to the agency that you all voted out of here. And I'm sorry, but this, and it contradicts some of the statements you're probably going to hear later that 0.37 has not been accepted as the best estimate. And what this says, and I'll just read it out to all of you, is based on the results of the last stock assessment workshop, biological reference points have been set for the entire U.S. sea scallop stock. The threshold fishing mortality rate for fully recruited scallops that generates the maximum yield per recruit, FMAX, was estimated at 0.37. Not our words. This is the document that was submitted to the agency that we're reconsidering today. Okay? And one thing I also want to address is there's been a lot of talk about if we fish at this higher level, there's a possibility of localized overfishing because, as you're certainly all aware, scallops are basically a sedentary species. They don't move around like fish do. And so you have the possibility that the fishing pressure is not even throughout the fishery, and you'll whatever is open, you fish more on. And, you're going to hear concerns in the council presentation from the staff about localized overfishing. But I want you to think back to that first slide we showed. Even with those concerns about localized overfishing, the difference between the biomass projections is 4 million pounds out of 400 million pounds, or less than 1%. So even with those concerns of maybe there's some localized overfishing in the open areas that occur with the higher days of sea level, the actual effect is less than 1% effect on the biomass, according to the best available science before us. And then on the issue of 0.37, the SSC endorsed 0.37 and then made their ABC recommendation of 0.29 as being a 25% chance of overfishing occurring based on that projection that was given to them provided by the PDT. Now, some excellent work provided by the PDT. And for those of you that weren't familiar with the process, I mean, the PDT first came to the SSC with sort of a qualitative assessment of the state of the scallop stock assessment. And the SSC correctly recognized that because of the wealth of information that we have in the scallop stock assessment, we're a data-rich fishery, which is, we're blessed to be that way. They said, we can do better than a qualitative assessment. We can do a quantitative assessment. And Dr. Hart did a tremendous amount of work, came back with this quantitative assessment that came back with the probabilities, and I'll show you some more of her work later on. But what the SSC was saying, they endorsed this 0.37, and then they accepted the ABC recommendation at 0.29 or 65.2 million pounds. And this next slide just goes through the whole process in more detail. And, council staff will argue that you can't accept 0.37, but what we're saying is FMAX is defined in the document as the best estimate of the time. You have an SSC endorsement of 0.37 for every other fishery we've talked about. That is the word. When the SSC endorses something, that is your best available science unless proven otherwise. And we're just asking to be treated like every other fishery has been treated. And the council, ultimately, not the stock assessment workshop, chooses the objective and measurable criteria for identifying what FMAX is and what overfishing is. Okay? But be that as may, and I don't want to get too hung up on this 0.37 or 0.29, because as I demonstrated earlier, the 0.24 is a minimal risk of going over the 65.2 at 0.29, regardless of whether you think it's the ABC or the FMAX. The industry has no interest in going over that. You have no interest in us going over that. And the 0.24, the way it's set up now, the chances, like I said, the only way you can argue that you're going to go over that number is if you believe we're really going to achieve more than a 50% landings increase over what's projected. And that's just, you know, as I said, you've got to come up with an argument if you're going to support that. What we have here is, this is from a paper provided by Dr. Hart. That was really, I guess, the source document that the SSC considered when they were giving their SSC recommendations. And what this represents really is the future of fisheries management. I mean, this is really incredible stuff, because what she's done is she ran a Monte Carlo assessment where she ran the various scenarios in the fishery over 10,000 times and came out with probabilities and percent losses from associated with different fishing levels. And what you see here is that, you know, under the red box, you have a 0.37 where you have a 47% chance of overfishing and, you know, negligible loss in yield. Then you drop down to the ABC recommendation of 0.29, and there you have a 25% chance of overfishing. Like, for anyone's confused, this, she has this set up in overall probability, and to get percentage, which is what most of us are used to talking, you just move the decimal point two spaces to the right. So it's a 25% chance of overfishing with a 1.23% loss in yield. But then you get down to the two options we're talking about, 0.24 or 0.2. And what you see is you go from a 13% chance of overfishing. And I'd also remind you, Amendment 10, the document that's still controlling here, requires that we fish at a 20% chance of exceeding FMAX or overfishing. So we were below the requirement in Amendment 10 with the 0.24, well below, at almost half that requirement. And then you go down to 6% at 0.2. But what you really need to look at is, you know, this really, you know, this quantifies the decisions you have to always have to weigh here, the benefits and the costs. And what are the costs of going down here? You double your loss in yield by going to that extra precaution from 13%, which is almost at half of what you're already required yourselves to do in Amendment 10, to go even lower, and then you double the yield. We are in the realm of diminishing returns, clearly in the realm of diminishing returns, by choosing 0.2 over 0.24. Another thing we have to talk about is the projections that we have in FASC. You know, the last stock assessment was done in 2007. We're due for another stock assessment this summer. And so we're at the out years of the projections from the stock assessment workshop number 45. And it's helpful to go back and look at, you know, what, okay, 3 years ago, what did we think we were going to be achieving in this fishery from the projections at that time? And what they projected was we would be landing in this year around 75 million pounds of scallops in 2009. Or under a scenario, or actually 70 million pounds of scallops under the 0.2 scenario, which is what we fished in 2009. And in reality, we're going to land around 57 million pounds. And I note this because a lot of the council's argument is why we should accept 0.2 is based on not a 3-year projection, but a 6-year projection. And as you can see, even at 3 years, the past projections have been a little bit odd. I mean, we're starting to get into the outer realm of what is reliable here. And so keep that in your mind when we talk about, okay, what are we being asked to accept as a deal when they're talking about a 6-year projection? And that's what this next slide talks about. This slide shows that basically it's done by the economic staff that looks at the total benefits between the two options. And what they show is that after 2016, after 6 years, the total difference between the two scenarios is less than 0.86%, less than 1%. That's after a 6-year projection. I'd argue this is well, well within the margin of error on these projections. As we just saw from the last projection, you know, even at 3 years, things start getting a little squishy. And at 6 years, I mean, this is asking a lot of these models, especially when you consider for these benefits to be realized, it's going to require the implementation of 4 separate frameworks. 4 frameworks, all with different management measures. Okay? So if anyone can sit here and promise us to us today that after the process of implementing 4 different frameworks, that this they're going to guarantee this outcome, I don't think anyone's going to make that promise, because you can't. There's just so many unknowns going forward with these 4 frameworks. And that's what it comes down to. I mean, that's what this debate is at the end of the day. The council staff, in their arguments, are going to argue that the industry should accept a deal where they take a $40 million cut between the two different options in 2010, and that's a certain number. It's going to be a $40 million cut. On the projection that over 6 years they'll net $18 million back, that's the deal that's being offered. Anyone here, would anyone here put their businesses into that scenario? Would anyone take that deal? Knowing that despite the best efforts of all these people and a lot of hard work has gone into this, these projections are uncertain as they go. The further you go out to the in the out years, they get more and more uncertain. And these proposed benefits are so far within the margin of error that we don't know exactly what those benefits are going to be out. But we do know that in the midst of this great recession, you're looking at inflicting a $40 million cut on the fishery that is really the backbone of so many fishing communities up and down this coast. That's why we're here. I mean, that's what brought us back here today. That's the nub of the issue. And as we've seen, it's not a conservation issue. You know, for once, we're not talking in that realm. You know, either, you know, the PDT endorsed 0.24 as being a safe option. That question was asked at the last council meeting. You know, is this a safe option? Do you endorse this? Are you comfortable with this? And the PDT responded, yes, we are. And as I've gone through before, you know, the chances of going through the 65.2 million threshold, no matter what you call it, are minimal to none. And this is another slide showing sort of the benefits, you know, of overall landings over the scenario would have projected, and it's a 5 million pound difference out of 4, you know, a 1% difference in projected landings. And I refer you back to the SAW projected landings for this year and how far that, you know, they were off. They were off by 20 million pounds for 1 year. And we're being told that we should take this deal on a projected difference in landing of 5 million pounds over 6 years. There's no certainty there. How in good conscience could the industry, the people with the skin in the game, take that cut on a landing projections that we know, despite everyone's best efforts, are speculative at best? And that's the issue. And just in closing, there's going to be also a lot of talk about procedure and whether or not, you know, will this cause delay and all these things. I mean, I had several conversations with the National Marine Fisheries Service. I look forward to their comments on how this can work procedurally. But do know that I would never have advocated to the Fisheries Survival Fund that we would go for reconsideration if we didn't check that box as this was procedurally possible. And I've run into too many procedural walls in this council to do that. You know, I wouldn't be doing the scallop industry justice if we didn't check that box beforehand and know that procedurally this is possible. Is it going to be some more work? Yes. But sometimes, you know, that's what has to happen to correct a bad decision in the prior bad decision. And so this is procedurally possible. There is going to be some talk about yellowtail, and we'll talk about that. But do know this is not going to be the normal discussion about yellowtail because, you know, the scallop industry is quite heartened by the response it's received from the groundfish industry and being very supportive in our efforts to increase to 0.24, despite the slight increases in yellowtail that it will require. Because, you know, the groundfish people and all the fishing people realize that if the scallop industry cannot realize the fruits of its labor, cannot, you know, after rebuilding this resource, cannot take advantage of that resource, then what hope does it have for other fisheries? You know, is the groundfish fishery ever going to be able to reap the benefits of all its hard work if the scallopers can't? I mean, we talk about precedent, the precedent of revisiting, yes. There's also precedent on how we're going to manage these fisheries. We are with a fishery of 150% of BMSY, and we're talking about cutting it. But, you know, even though we have a measure that meets the conservation goals, we're going to cut it by $40 million. What kind of message does that send to everyone out there that's under rebuilding plans? Are there better days ahead if this is the way they're going to be treated? If you stake with the point two, the answer clearly is no. Better days are not ahead. Fold up. Get out. It's not going to happen. And so we strongly, strongly encourage you to reconsider this because going forward, you can send a message today that it ends today, that we're going forward, we are going to try, within the conservation limits, maximize the benefits to the industry and to this country. And that's what we want you to do in the middle of this great recession. Thank you.
Anyone else from the audience wishing to speak? Vito?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, just wanted to talk on the behalf of the groundfish industry. As you know, the coalition is assisting 12 groundfish sectors. And just to give you some stats, 81% of the Georges Bank yellowtail, 65% of the Southern New England yellowtail, and 78% of Cape Cod yellowtail is within the network of boats that have been talking about this upcoming problem. And we just wanted to extend to the council, we have no opinion on the actual scallop science. That's outside of our expertise. But it appears that it's roughly 80,000 pounds of Georges Bank yellowtail and 50,000 pounds of Southern New England yellowtail. Our sector leaders have talked about this in passing, and most agree that the yellowtail-directed fishery has basically been decimated by the combination of the rebuilding plans and the scientific uncertainty. We've got very low catch limits allowed on all three yellowtail stocks. So the directed yellowtail fishery has already been decimated in that case. So basically, I think what we just wanted to extend out there is that internally the members would be able to figure out how to not allow a division between scallop fishermen and ground fishermen occur at this level. No one wants a delay in Amendment 16, and no one wants a delay in Framework 44 stumbling people, but I hope that there's a solution to that. We just didn't want, we wanted to make clear, and we can't speak for the 20% of the yellowtail that does not, is not within the network. But we can at least say that internally folks have decided personally to make sure that they'll make it right within the network. And we don't want to have yellowtail be what stops brother fishermen from getting an additional $40 million of yield. So we support the scallop fishery in that sense from the standpoint of our impacts. We want to point out that Southern New England is especially in trouble with the groundfish fishery, with the Southern New England blackback winter flounder issue, and want to point out that every pound of yellowtail to them is critically important. Yet, overall, they recognize that there's a benefit in ground fishermen and scallop fishermen working together in the future, making sure that we get to more full retention type of systems where we can improve the science and the data, because we believe that there's plenty of yellowtail out there for everybody, and we need to start somewhere. Basically, that $40 million, again, it would be good to hear today when the council gets into deeper detail maybe on this subject as to the numbers of yellowtail that could be lost. But those are the assumptions that we're working with is in that relatively low level. 80,000 pounds used to be one trip on Georges Bank. And also, the groundfish fishery supports the scallop fishery and the idea of the infrastructure, especially in the port of New Bedford, that, you know, fuel, repairs, and everything is very important. So these industries at this point are going hand in hand. So the Northeast Seafood Coalition just wanted to relieve you folks at least of some of the burden of if there's a concern on yellowtail that that the fishermen have decided to stand behind the scallopers on the yellowtail portion of this argument. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. In the back.
Good morning. My name is Peter Hughes. I'm from Atlantic Cape Fisheries in Cape May, New Jersey. I'm very appreciative that this was my company, and you know, I see a lot of new industry representatives out in the audience, a lot of new faces. And I can say with a lot of gladness to see that this was revisited and put back on the agenda. One of the things that I'd like to say is a number of years ago, I believe it was 2007, when the specifications came out for the elephant trunks trips, industry actually came back to NIMS and said, you know what, we're receiving too many trips. We don't think it's viable. We'd like you to reexamine this, and industry will actually take one less trip in the elephant trunk as a conservation measure, because we didn't want it to seem as though, number one, we didn't want to decimate the area, and number two, we didn't want it to seem as though we were overfishing, overstepping our boundaries, grabbing more than we should. And I believe that NIMS made an emergency ruling at that point and changed our decision and reduced our number of trips. And this was brought forth because of industry. Industry doesn't want to overstep their boundary. Industry wants to fish within their conservation. But we want to fish up to the level to sustain our businesses. A 20-25% reduction in processing across our docks, you know, that's 25% less more scallops in our freezers, 25% less going through our tunnels, 25% less fuel we're purchasing to put on our vessels, gear right on down the line, food to their grocery stores. So I think that SSC and the PDT recommended 0.20 and 0.24, and they were both well within the conservation, and I think that I'm heartened to see that it's being reexamined here today. Thank you.
Jim Kendall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall of the Bedford Seafood Consulting. I, like others, am appreciative of the chance to revisit this issue, and I'd like to thank our elected representatives and officials for coming here and speaking before you. But I would like to point out one thing. We've been a little bit narrow in our focus. This isn't just a New Bedford issue. This is an entire East Coast issue. Everybody that participates within the scallop fishery, and even ports that don't even realize that they're affected by the scallop fishery because they have dealers there. It's not just New Bedford that's going to be severely impacted. For the best rebuilt fishery that this council can even hope to point to, I think wherever in the country, we've had the ability and the good luck and the good fortune to put this resource probably at the highest of any other resources that at one time were considered severely overfished. Now we need to learn to manage it correctly. There were several points made when this issue started coming back up. Should we readdress this? Are the economic reports correct? We're going to make a benefit. If we can suffer today, we'll benefit tomorrow. And that was one of the strong arguments that was made and why we shouldn't revisit this. Yes, you'll have pain today, but you'll be better tomorrow. Well, I asked to have passed out a summary of a report that was done by SMAS by two professors from there, Dr. Kevin Stokesbury and Brad Harris. And I think it points out a significant point that's been brought up to some degree a little bit earlier today and at other times as well. There's an awful lot of uncertainty out there. And when we look back and we do either retrospective analysis or when you do reports like this, that take a physical look at the ocean bottom and count what's being missed. You don't have any better science. This isn't a data poor fishery. It's probably one of the richest in the country, if not the world. And for some reason, we haven't learned to adopt that science and put it to good use. So what I'd like to point out is in the year 2004 through 2005, this report says that they've documented that there was a 16,000 metric ton loss due to natural mortality. I don't know how you can call that natural, but there was a mortality in there that was brought about by natural conditions because we didn't learn how to access or manage that particular fishery. Now, 16,000 tons doesn't sound like much, but the metric tons, it works out to over 14.5 million pounds from that one area alone, which is the smallest section of one of the closed areas that we have access to. If you take into account what happened in the other three access areas, then you end up with an overall mortality that probably could exceed your overall harvest. We are not managing this fishery the way it should. You have a chance today to correct some of that problem. I'd like to point out a couple other facts. or arguments that were made and offer some counterpoints to those. The council, I believe anyways, and I think some others feel the same way, did not have the benefit or the full or accurate scientific advice when it made its last decision. I've heard from several people saying that, gee, I didn't know that was the case. I didn't know that was the recommendation. I ask you to go back and find out what the real science is and then make a decision where you need to correct that error, what we feel is an error. The SSC, it was commented that we need to follow the SSC recommendations as provided in Magnuson or as mandated in Magnuson. Well, I feel that you should, too, and I don't believe that we did in this particular instance. So that oven by itself, I think, calls for a revisitation of that science, of that information, of their recommendation. And I'd like to point out that this isn't something that's new. I think it was Drew that mentioned that there is legal basis for doing this. Well, no better example has been set, I think, than by what was done recently down in the Mid-Atlantic. They've asked their SSC to go back and revisit the black sea bass. Now, I don't think they're far down the road as what we are with the scallops. I mean, but, you know, if people oftentimes say, I wish I could go back and fix what I did wrong then, or if I knew then what I know now, well, you have that opportunity. I'm really asking you to take it. Another point I'd like to make is this is not a battle of the scallopers, the rich big scallopers, which I'm sick to death of hearing from other fishermen, because they feel that they're being taken advantage of. And the reason they feel that way is because people are actually advocating that that is the case. We are not asking for more scallops this year than what we've harvested in the past 2 years. We're just asking that please don't reduce us down to a 25% reduction that is uncalled for. They realize that they probably won't harvest as many scallops in the coming year. And if that's the case, they will not take as much yellowtail. Or they shouldn't take as much yellowtail. We can never make that guarantee, but I know they've been working hard against it. I've spoken with other scallop industry people who are firmly in favor of trying to approach the council again and the service and try and get that scallop industry yellowtail survey done. We think we can provide some great information on this that's not available probably in any other fashion. And finally, you look at New Bedford, and right now, with the state of the fishery being where it is on the East Coast, here, particularly up here in New England, the one surviving strong port that you have is New Bedford. And a lot of that is because the scallop industry has been healthy for the last 5 or 6, 7 years. Gloucester's taken terrible hits. They continue to take terrible hits. They're about to lose every last bit of infrastructure they have. Green Harbor lost its ice plant. There is no place to go for full overall service than a port like New Bedford. You've heard from the mayor and from others that this would hurt that port probably immeasurably and probably irreparably. If that happens, once again, it's not just a New Bedford issue. It's an overall fishery issue. The old East Coast depends on New Bedford in more ways than we've come to realize. So once again, I hope when it comes time for the vote, that each one of you will take a look at the points and the facts. And I know we often don't like to confuse issue with facts, but today the facts are going to be made available to you. I hope you partake of them. Thank you.
Richie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rich Kanashter, Whalen City Auction in New Bedford. You know, being in the port of New Bedford, where we have a diversified port of dragomen and scallopers, and the buzzword around with the dragomen is that we've been sacrificing for 15 years now. The days will be better. Things will be better. And now they're going into the uncertain of cat shares May 1st. And you all know the uncertainty of it as well as I do. But in their minds, they see their brother fishermen, the scallop fleet, with a resource of 150% rebuilt, getting cut 25%. What are you showing the industry?
When does it end? Where's this light? So far this year in New Bedford, and I'm saying New Bedford only because we're a yellowtail port. I don't know if you realize that so far this year, we discarded 1.5 million pounds of yellowtail out the scuppers. 1.5 million pounds of yellowtail. And if you look at what it's going to take to make things work here, 80,000 pounds, 100,000 pounds. Christ, in the 90s, that was a trip. One trip would land that in yellowtail. One trip. And my last point is, I've always spoken to the council, and I hope you remember, when I approached the council with this yellowtail, with the U.S.-Canada sharing agreement, and how the RA would be able to adjust the TAC quarterly. And I would always say, please don't open up this TAC heavily in the spring and in where the yellowtails are in spawn. Only because we'd get 50 cents a pound, 25 cents a pound, the market wasn't good. My response over the years were, and I quote, that we care about the stock. We're not into marketing or management or the price of fish. When did things change? When is your concern on the price of scallops? Last year, we put about 15 million pounds to the auction of scallops. And I can ask any buyer in New Bedford, Washington, Seattle, Washington, Maine, can you tell me what the price is going to be March 1st when it opens up? None of them can give it to me. You're dealing with imports. You're dealing with an economic world out there with the EU. EU's driving this price. They're in trouble now. So how can we honestly say that this is going to be the price for 2011, 2012? It's not feasible. It really is not. So I thank you, John, for bringing this back up, and I thank the council members, but let's make common sense of this. Thank you.
Mr. Wells? I just ask you speak as loud as you can into the mic. Some of the council members, I know I am having a little difficulty hearing through the speaker here. Thank you. Press the button.
Mr. Chairman, members of the council, my name is Bill Wells. I manage a business in Seaford, Virginia. We take out 16 scallop vessels, 2 day boats, and 14 limited access full-time scallopers. There are 3 families that own these boats. My father and I own 7 of them, and 2 other families own the remaining vessels. And the reason I mention this is the most important point I want to make about our business is that we are small. We are in Virginia. That makes us a little bit unusual, I think, for today. And every single boat owner either currently runs or used to run one of those boats, including me. We're all owner-operators or were at some point. In Virginia, the largest seafood industry by value is the scallop industry. And we are the second most We have the second highest landings of any state in this country behind the state of Massachusetts. 2 of the points that I want to make to you, and I want to make 3, have already been made, so I'm going to make them very quickly. First point, which I think was made by the first 2 speakers, was that we do not have a resource issue. I am not a scientist. I do believe in the PDT and the SSC. I have read the documents, and to the degree that I can understand them, I agree with the previous speakers that it does appear that there is only a nominal benefit to be at 0.20 as a mortality target when compared to 0.24. That said, if I believed there were a resource issue here, I would not be here. Because I do believe you start with protecting the resource. I do think that is the mandate that we all have as members of the industry as well as members of the council. I get that. And I believe that we don't have that issue here. The second point that I want to work towards is about the economics. I don't think this has come out quite as succinctly and perhaps as focused as I would like to make it. I agree with this document in terms of the projection for 2010 pricing and so forth. This is a good document, and I commend you on it. In my opinion, in 2010, the price, we know we're going to have fewer landings. With 0.2, we're going to have significantly fewer landings. I believe the price is going to soar. It says it in this document, and my experience tells me that it will. Now, that said, I think by the third quarter in 2010, we're going to see prices get high enough that there's going to be a pullback on purchasing. That's what my experience tells me. I spoke to two of the three largest purchasers of scallops in this country in the last 2 weeks. They agree with that. I just didn't happen to be able to get the third one on the phone. It wasn't a question of was that going to occur. It was in what quarter would that occur. Now, the reason this is important for us, and then now I'm building up to my second point, is if we're sitting here in 2010 and we're going to land with the 0.20 mortality figure, 41 million pounds, and we're proceeding to 2011, we've just had a 25% decline in landings, and now we're going to have a 40 to 50% increase in 2011. Again, right here in the document, and I understand that. My question and my point is, who is going to buy these scallops? Because the large purchasers will not be on board. My experience tells me that. Not my experience as the chairman of your advisory panel, because this is my life experience in catching, unloading, and selling and buying sea scallops. I just don't see how the market can react that rapidly. We only have one parallel to this in my lifetime, and that was the 9/11 attack. And I'm not comparing this to that, and I'm not using the word terrorism. Please do not misunderstand me. But in my 30 years in the scallop industry, that's the only time that I saw something like that occur. And it took 2.5 years to recover lost markets as a result of that terrorist attack in 2011. Now, this is a regulatory decision, but I think there is a parallel there. Let me tell you that we have had a long relationship with Darden Foods. Darden is the parent company for Red Lobster. I'm just going to use them as an example. If Red Lobster today decided to make a change on their menu, it takes them 8 months from the decision made today before we as a group can walk in and order it and have it put on a plate and set before us. If my and the rest of my friends' assessment is correct, and if we lose market share in the third quarter of 2010, and if we start to get it back in the first quarter of 2011, it certainly can't happen before then. We're not going to gain market share in December and January. That's just not going to happen. It never has. It's not going to happen here. But if it does occur in the first quarter, and that's the soonest anybody thinks that it could happen, then we could be 8 months away from seeing this actually get on a plate somewhere. The acquisition of this product will occur before that, but we'll be well into the 2011 fishing year. What is my point? Loss of market, assuming we can get those markets back, because when that place on the grocery shelf gets empty, something else goes in its place. There's not an empty place there saying, when you get your price back, come and call us. No, that's not the way it works. You've got to get that guy off that shelf and take that place back. But if I'm right in my assessment, then we're going to see those quarters that we gained in pricing in 2010 become dollars that we lose in 2011. And I'm not talking about a dollar. I'm talking dollars. Now, I agree with the speakers before me. I can't get to the level of detail here. I don't have the education to do it. And quite frankly, I don't have the experience that could tell me that the price will be $7.50 in September of 2010. My experience tells me that it will be high, and it will be high enough that we'll lose market share. My experience tells me in 2011 that it will be low, dirt low, numbers we haven't seen in a long time, probably since 2001 in 2002. And when we regain that market, we will have lost tens of millions of dollars. And remember, we know we're going to take a $40 million hit in 2010. I believe that. I accept that as a reasonable number. We're only hopefully going to get $18 million back over the next 6 years. That said, I think we could lose more than the $18 million just in pricing in the year 2011. So I just can't support, based on my experience, the 0.20 mortality target. To conclude, my company, my small company in Seaford, Virginia, tomorrow I'll be meeting with employees. If we're at 0.2 tomorrow, there will be 15 jobs that will be affected. That may not seem like a lot. It's a small company. When you expand out to other people, other larger companies, that, of course, is going to grow. We only have 125 employees, and I'm counting the people that work on the boats as well as everybody that works on land. The men on the boats, that you're going to take 8 men into a closed area in the next couple of years, will not happen. That won't happen in anywhere. Won't happen in New Bedford either. But it certainly won't happen with those 14 boats at our dock. That seventh man that should be on the boat, and for the 2 boats that I own will be on the boat, will be gone because a lot of guys will go six-handed. They have to do what's within their power to create income. This is bad. I will lay off at least or dramatically reduce hours for 10 to 12 people myself tomorrow. And I'll tell you, the newest employee has been there at least 3 years. Everyone at our company has the same benefits. My health benefits are the same as the guy that shovels ice on the bags when they're unloaded. When I take him from 50 hours a week, it won't be to 48. It'll be to 38. When I take a guy from 40, it won't be to 38. It'll be to 20 or 25. They don't have health benefits now. They're part-time. That's a bad deal. I hate to have to do that, but I've got to make sure that I'm there with everybody else working for me 2 years from now. My point is the following. This is not a one-year hit in 2010. This is a two-year hit, 2010 and 2011. Lastly, I would like to thank you on behalf of the advisors, and I know I speak for them, and about half of us are here today, for reconsidering this issue. You've been thanked by everybody before me, and I promise you everybody after me will thank you for that. I truly didn't realize how big a deal this was. I am a former council member. I just didn't think it through that we had never done this when I was on the council. I appreciate it. I appreciate every one of you taking the time to listen to us and to reconsider this issue. And as my final statement, I do want to remind you of what other people reminded you before. This is like a three-legged stool. This is the industry and the audience. I think we're a good industry. I think we're responsible. I'm proud to be a member of it. When Peter came up and said to you that we had a reduction of one trip years ago, the beginning point of that wasn't one trip. That we went from 9 in the beginning to 5. The ending point, the last vote, was 1. We worked it through the council process, through the committee process, and originally with the advisors to get it down to where we were down to 6. And they went, I believe it's from 6 down to 5 at the council level. His point is well made. We came and we asked for less because we felt like in that instance that staff had overestimated the benefit of the elephant trunk. We happen to be right. We can be wrong, but we happen to be right then. We believe we're right now with the 0.24 mortality target. The second issue on this concluding point of mine is, we have a strong relationship with the scientific community. It wasn't always that way. 25 years ago, we would go into a room and they'd sit over here. The New Bedford scallopers would sit where John is. The Virginia scallopers would sit over here. And that's the way it was. It was exactly that way. It's not that way anymore. I'm just as comfortable sitting next to Bill DePaul, Devorah Hart, Gabriel Miranda, fishermen from New Bedford. It's a one industry now. The day boat fleet is part of this. Fully part of this industry now. And the people behind me and after me will talk about how they're going to be impacted. But that's the second leg of this stool. The science is with us. We want to be with the scientists. We view this issue as if, unlike most instances, it is not the council, it's not the scientists here saying less. The industry here is saying more, and the council in the middle having to make a tough decision. That was my experience when I was on the council. The way I view this is the science in the industry is over here, and the council is over here. And our job today is, if we're right, to get us back to where we're all in the same place. That third leg is the council. And I want to conclude with this last two sentences. And thank you for your tolerance in allowing me to speak to you for so long. I do believe in this industry, and I do believe in the science, and I believe in the council system. So does this industry. As on a personal level, I believe in every one of you. I know you came here to do the right thing. We may not agree on what the right thing is. But if you agree with me, I urge you to adopt the 0.24 mortality target, change the decision you made before, and do the right thing for this industry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Time for a few more comments. Yes, sir.
Good morning. My name is David Gray. I'm the general manager of Chesapeake Bay Packing in Newport News, Virginia. And I just wanted to follow up on a few things that Bill had mentioned. Mostly we've been speaking about New Bedford and the Northeast, but I think this is a more widespread issue than just that. As Bill has said, we're in Virginia. We operate seven vessels. We pack approximately 15 independent vessels, as well as other companies in the small boat harbor in Newport News. But I think it's even more than that. And I think these are several of the issues that you need to understand, that the scallop business is much more comprehensive than just the ink on paper in this situation. From a harvesting standpoint, that's one issue. The days would be cut back, and that's a significant problem. I don't think the science particularly supports that. And from a secondary standpoint, from a processor, there are issues with operating plants and reducing reduction in forces that would be very real from these decisions being made today. So my point in being here today is to put a face and a name and inform you that we are very concerned about the industry in the long term, not just the near term, and the consequences that we all have to face as managers and operators of companies would be real and affect many people down the line. It's not just a reduction in scallop meats and money. It's real people that will lose their jobs, that will be affected, families, not just directly in the industry, but indirectly in the supporting industries, in the ice business, the box business, the paper business. You can go on and on. I mean, if you look at the list of people here in the pamphlet that was handed out, there are just so many people that are involved in this business. And I just want you to make or realize that it's a very important decision here. And just to give you a little bit of background, I took over as general manager at Chesapeake Bay approximately a week after your decision to reduce, which makes it much more difficult in the future for me to manage the business. But as Bill Wells and other people here will say, the decision that's come out today will affect what we do next year in regards to real people. And I think it's very important that we put names and faces to these. It's not just paperwork. And I really think, maybe to take even a step further than some people have said, we're really partners in the same business. We can't operate without you, and you not operating without us. So it's to everybody's benefit to work together and come to a positive solution. I think it's there on the table, but we just need to do it. So I would, just like everyone else, I would like to thank you for reopening this, and I look forward to working with you in the future and managing this industry to the success that we have done in the last 15 years. Thank you.
I see a hand in the back there. I don't see a face. Peter?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Peter Shelley, Conservation Law Foundation. I guess I'm up here as a bit of a minority voice this morning. But I do want to speak to what I think is an unprecedented political attack backed up by some journalists who I hesitate to call reporters on the credibility and integrity of the council. I think the threats against the chairman by Representative Frank were inexcusable. We don't know, and we don't have a position on the specifics or particulars around the scallop question that you're facing today. The council's decision, I've read it now and looked at the materials just to find out what this was all about, seems like a rational and reasoned decision. As many have said, not the only possible outcome, but it was a debated decision that was trying to advance a number of objectives. And I think it was properly based, as far as I can tell, on the data and analysis that was before the council. At the same time, Drew's presentation this morning was a very strong presentation. And as you all know, our position, if the council's decision wasn't based on the best available science, I think it should be changed and reversed, if that's appropriate. But there are mechanisms. There are legitimate processes by which you do that. There are appeals to the secretary. There are appeals to the courts. There are recognized methods under the Magnuson Act to raise these issues. And just as an aside, I certainly do look forward to the discussion the chair promised at a future date on these sorts of issues. We've certainly looked at reconsiderations that were based on new science or clear errors in the past. Maybe there's a different category that we should all consider as part of this process, although on the other hand, this council's plate is overfilled. A lot of fisheries get affected when one fishery stalls out the schedule. So in this case, the scallop industry, or parts of it anyway, took a different route, a political route. I think of all the letters that I read in the packet, the one that concerned me the most was the one that came from Congress, based on one perspective that was fed to the staff of those offices on what this decision was about, what the basis of it was, what the council knew or didn't know when it acted. The last letter of a similar sort I remember was back in 86, something like that, where a number of congressional people ganged up on the National Marine Fisheries Service, that time it was, around groundfish management, and backed the National Marine Fisheries Service off of a proposed management action that it felt was necessary to intervene in the ground fishery at that point to stop the collapse of the fishery. That political attack succeeded. The National Marine Fisheries Service backed off what it felt was the appropriate set of measures. And at least in my opinion, that was one of the actions that led ultimately to the collapse of the ground fishery and all the losses of jobs associated with that in the 90s. This is a unprecedented process against the council. I frankly think it's a lousy process. I would be embarrassed by it. All the people who apologized to you today were silent over the last weeks as the press circulated story after story about how bad the council's decision was, how unfounded it was. Where were the letters to the editor back then saying that this council was acting on its best judgment at the time? Finally, I would like to say that this council does have a responsibility for its actions. I think in the last decade, the council has stepped up to that plate in ways that it never did before then. And you are all entitled to a lot of credit for the hard actions you've had to take. But this council also has a very serious responsibility to the process. And that process protects people who aren't in the room, who don't have investments in the scallop industry, who are not here today to talk about the losses that they've suffered over the last two decades. We hope that you take your responsibility around the process just as seriously as you take your responsibilities around the actions. Thank you.
Senator Tarr, would you like to have a word?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and through you to the members of the council. And as you know, it's very unusual that I don't want to have a word, but I do appreciate being recognized. And I was actually having a conversation at the side here for a minute, so I wanted a moment to catch my breath. But obviously, I'm here today for the thing that is currently before you with regard to the Scollop decision and the reconsideration of that decision. And I consider the fact that the members of this council take very seriously their responsibility as stewards of one of the greatest resources this nation has in terms of our commercial fisheries in the Northeast region. And it's for that reason that I believe that you will reconsider, and I hope that you will, and I urge you to. And I do take a little bit of a disagreement with the prior speaker in that I think the reason that you're seeing the kind of passion that you're seeing is because folks are so concerned with the integrity of this process and the ability of the council to consider all of the relevant and available information when it makes a decision that literally impacts the survival of one sector of the commercial fishing industry. And so while some folks have maybe been a little bit overzealous, and certainly a lot of folks have been very aggressive, I think the reason for that is what's at stake. And what's at stake is certainly at least $40 million to the Massachusetts economy through the Port of New Bedford and others. And that's one of the reasons that I'm here, even though I don't represent the Port of New Bedford and a significant component of the scallop industry. Why I am here is because I think it's important to this process, as we move forward together, to make very difficult decisions. And you know that better than I, far better than I, because you've had to make them and you will have to make more. That we reserve to ourselves the opportunity to say that we will take the time and we'll take the opportunity to do what's right. Even if it means going back and retreading some issues that we've already looked at with an understanding that there may be information that would change the way that we view it, and we ought to do that because what hangs in the balance is a very important element of the commercial fishing industry. Now, we all know, and we've had the discussion many times before, I at this table and you at that one, about the fact that we are directed to use the best available science, we're directed to make rational decisions, and we're directed to manage the fishery not merely for the reconstruction of the stocks, which is an important priority, but we're directed to manage the fishery as a sustainable harvest for the people of the United States of America. And it seems to me that when we talk about the difference between the lower limit that's been set and the prior limit, which, according to everything that I've read, is suggested to continue to be sustainable, that is in the best interest of sustaining the fishery. At the end of the day, it's important not only that we conserve and rebuild the scallop stocks, but it's important that we sustain the scallop fleet. That's one of the reasons that we have a Magnuson Act, and that's one of the reasons we make decisions about management. If it weren't so, we would all come to the table and say, let's stop fishing. But we don't do that because we're not directed to. We're here to manage fishing. And as we manage fishing, I think sometimes we have to change course. We have to navigate carefully. We have to avoid the pitfalls of saying we've dealt with an issue and we can't revisit it, even if there might be a better opportunity to move forward. So with that, I do appreciate the opportunity, Mr. Chairman, to be able to speak. And I want to say, express a word of personal gratitude to you. I know this hasn't been an easy situation. I know that you've been under a lot of pressure. But I know that you've also been willing to be open-minded. And that, to me, is an important element of leadership. And it's an important asset in the dynamic that we all face. We're going to need to go forward together. We know all of the things that are coming with the implementation of sectors. We know what's happening with some of the most recent reviews of the stocks. We know what's happening with the trawl surveys. So I think in order to look the folks that are behind me and many, many others squarely in the eye and say we take our responsibility seriously and we're doing the right thing, we need to take the opportunity just to take a second look at this issue, because the opportunity is there to mitigate a lot of unnecessary harm. I really don't see the downside in that. I see only upside for all of us.
and I hope you'll take advantage of that opportunity. And I thank you for the opportunity to share a few words.
Anything further? I see a hand. I come on forward, man in the hat.
Good morning. I'll keep this very brief. Mike Marchetti, general category scallop fisherman, advisor, Eastern New England Scallop Association. I represent general category fishermen. I'd like to say that I don't see anywhere any analyses or any deliberations of what's happened, consideration of the economic impact on the general category. We're in economic turmoil now over what's just been passed, Amendment 11, and isn't even implemented. And now we're looking at a potential another 25% cut, or whatever number I'll end up working out to. I feel we deserve higher consideration than that. And speaking for general category, and I believe that we would all go for the 0.24. We'd all support that. Again, I reiterate, now that we're in an ITQ scenario, we deserve much more consideration than to be thoroughly marginalized and not even thought about by the council. Thank you.
Anything further? Bill?
Bill Gerenser, Portland, Maine. First of all, I want to thank the council for arranging this session. I think that in spite of precedents or whatever, sometimes it's a good idea to be responsive and to take a second look at things if there's a possibility that wrong decisions have been made. But I also want to point out that there was a comment made regarding the influence of politics in fisheries management. And I think one of the things that's made this council's job and National Marine Fisheries job difficult over the years has been influence from politics from a lot of different directions and in the courts. And I think National Marine Fisheries Service spends an awful lot of time and resources dealing with those things instead of just doing their job. So I think the fishing industry has usually been last to the table when it comes to using the courts and politics. And I think I would say that, you know, we might make a commitment to not use those venues if all the other stakeholders would also pull their lobbyists out of Washington and just work through the council so that when they don't get their way, we don't find pressure from other directions. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Good morning. Thanks again for the reconsideration. My name is Bob Vanasso. I'm the executive director of the Project to Save Seafood and Ocean Resources, which is best known for publishing the Saving Seafood website. I had no intention of speaking here today, but I do want to mention a few things very quickly. Although we do not hide the fact that we are an industry-funded daily summary of news and an industry-funded public relations and media relations effort, we do try to be fair. And a number of reporters who were, I believe, not so subtly criticized by the gentleman from the Conservation Law Foundation have been very clear that they've appreciated the fact that we've been balanced. And I'd also like to say that a number of reporters have worked very hard to try to shed light on this process. I'd also like to point out that we have made an effort to provide the opportunity to folks from government and from all sides to get their message out. Mr. Pappalardo knows that we offered him opportunity both on the air and in writing. He declined through his spokesperson, but that spokesperson, Pat Fiorelli, has been fantastic in getting information to us, and we've made it a point to get it out. The folks down in Washington, Monica Allen, Connie, the director, also have been great about getting information. Maggie Mooney-Zeus in Ms. Kirkle's shop, fantastic. We've extended an arm to Nancy Chivetta at Pew. We've extended an arm out to EDF. They have both accepted it and released information. That information has been in the press. When the Conservation Law Foundation had a problem with one of our columnists, we extended that opportunity. they declined with a vitriolic sort of, it's not worth our time. I'd also like to finally say, if you work in politics and you haven't been criticized by Congressman Frank, you're probably not doing your job. But the congressman said that if the reconsideration didn't take place, then perhaps the leadership should be reconsidered. The decision was made, yes, after some pressure, to do the reconsideration. I commend you for it. But I think the attack on the press and on the congressman by an entity that clearly does a great deal of lobbying influence was inappropriate. Thank you.
Anything further? Okay, we're going to take a 10-minute break, and when we come back, we'll have the staff give a presentation.